Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Steve Grasso, Brian Kelly, Steve Chavarone, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, Netflix shares are surging this year, leading the pack of FANG stocks. And one analyst says this is just the beginning of total domination. We've got the details. Plus, take a look at this mystery chart. It is a chart Wall Street cannot stop talking about, and it could spell big trouble ahead. We will explain. But first, we start off with stocks surging, the Dow up nearly 200 points today, adding to the year's rally, the S&P 500 closing well above the key 2800 level, and the market is now on track for its best start to the year since 1998, and it's not just here in the U.S. Emerging markets are breaking out, too. The EEM ETF is up 11% this year, and just last night, China doubling down on its fiscal stimulus, saying it will, quote, cut into its own flesh. Those are the words of the premier to support economic growth this year. So now, with everything looking pretty awesome once again, did investors just get the all clear to buy stocks? Guy.
So well, there's one question tonight. I like that. Usually one question I can handle. When you ask
it's
a
like
lot,
a and compound
I get very confused
question.
Friday night. It's a cut into your own flesh to make sure they have economic
they
growth.
They will do everything they need to do.
So if you think about that, like I say to myself, if there's about to be a trade deal, why would you have to cut in your own flesh to do everything you need to do? So, number one. But I'll answer your question because that's what I do. Emerging market breakouts. Yes, you're right. It's up 11.5, 12% in a short period of time as measured by the EEM. But you know where this sucker was this time in the beginning of 2018? 52.5. So we have a long way to go before we get anywhere near a breakout in this. Now, can it go higher? Yes, but you're talking about EEM at levels that we broke down from in October with the VIX now sub 13, which is exactly where it was in October. Now, again, I've been wrong for quite some time thinking the market's going to roll over, but these to me are more warning signs.
Your answer is no, though.
My answer is no.
No, N-O. What's your answer?
Yeah, 40 trillion. No, the answer is no. I'll start with the answer and then I'll backtrack. In China, industrial production, 09 lows. Retail sales, 2012 lows. No. The answer is no. We're
things
not out of the world.
Things are starting to pick up, though. It takes time for stimulus to pick
trillion,
up.
40 trillion in debt.
We had fixed asset investment the other night tick higher, showing that stimulus is actually taking effect.
40 trillion in debt, over 60. What are we
you
up to now?
You could have said that over and over again in the China bull market story.
Stagnant. Where's GDP going? Look at the chart on GDP. Where's productivity? Stagnant.
But that
where's
hasn't mattered. That hasn't mattered in this bull market whatsoever. In both China and
this
here,
is an over,
it hasn't
my
mattered.
Point is, this is an overshoot. This is not built on fundamentals. This is an
nothing,
overshoot.
But this
is
market
not
hasn't
all
been
clear.
Built on fundamentals since 2009. And you know what? I've actually been fairly cautious over the last couple of weeks. Some people have called me downright bearish, and it turns out I've been wrong because the market's rallied in my face. One of the reasons why was because I thought we would get a dollar breakout. The dollar index, Dixie, looked like it was going to break out through 98. That would have been very bad for multinationals. But what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, the dollar has come off. It looks like it's come off the boil a bit. So if you get a weak to stable dollar, especially if you get a weaker dollar, that's going to be very good for emerging markets. And it's a tailwind for U.S. stocks.
Look, if you need someone to be bullish, I'll step up. I think you've got three things going on. Number one, you've got no more rate hikes by the Fed. That was a pressure on emerging markets. I think number two, the dollar's unlikely to go ridiculously higher here. I think number three, all the market has allowed itself to price in terms of the trade war is that something inconsequential is going to happen. And so I think you have some potential for upside surprise there. And if you're not going to fight the Fed in the U.S., then why do you want to fight the Chinese government who's willing to cut their own flesh? So, you know, at Federated, we added to emerging markets last week ahead of what we think could be a run here. And look, it's underperformed the S&P by still 3 or 4%
this year. But everything they've done hasn't worked, though. We're turning the corner now.
So they've cut RRs 5 times in the past year. They have still yet to cut the VA tax for manufacturing and other sectors. Mm-hmm. They're going to cut their Social Security fees. They're going to cut lending to micro and small businesses.
Right.
These are all
If I ask Guy to do the over-under on how many times China's cut their triple R, what would it be?
Five times. Oh,
no. Not in the last year. Not in the last year. In the last 3 years. It never works.
But the bottom line is, it's working this year. Look at the Shanghai Composite. It's working this year.
Brian,
that's the thing.
It
doesn't matter if the fundamentals.
The market has rallied off a potential trade deal. Once that deal is done or not done, the market gives the all clear. To be sold, not to be bought.
I'm not sure I agree with that anymore. I would have agreed with that 2 weeks ago.
One of us is going to change to be bullish, and the market's going to crash. So I'm glad you changed before Guy and I changed.
If that's what you got to be, I'm just reading what I see out there, and I'm saying I was bearish. The market is rallying my face. I have to reevaluate my thesis. And I look at the Shanghai. Well, hang on. Stop yelling out loud so people can hear things. The Shanghai Composite has rallied this year with the Chinese stimulus. That is a change in the behavior of Chinese investors. So in that case, if you get a weaker dollar, that should be very good for emerging markets in general. And when you talk emerging markets, you do have to talk Shanghai.
I'm sorry, real quick. There was no way at your dinner table there was yelling and screaming.
No,
there was very polite.
A lot of math.
Honest.
There was a lot of math going on.
I like what you tried to do there.
If I got a B, then there would be a lot of yelling.
You never got a B, Mel. Anyway,
this is a tame dinner for my family. Look, I think the idea that we've hit, monetary policy endgame in China, I just don't think that's right yet. I think there's a lag on all these things. But if you've got a central authority that's throwing in, I think we're over 70 stimulus measures.
Yeah.
I think it's going to take some time. But I think in the second half of this year, you're going to get a reacceleration there.
I look at the mirror image of what Steve just said. You're saying you're hopeful because they have 70 stimulus measures.
Yeah.
I look at it as that nothing has worked. They threw the kitchen sink at it. They can't find growth. Growth is half of what they say it is.
Can't find 6% growth.
It's not 6%. Everyone knows it's not 6%.
Right, and
it's probably 2.5 to 3%. And you've got cascading.
That's your own skepticism about the validity of Chinese data.
No, that's everyone who looks at China. We trade off of the data that we have, but everyone knows. Even Steve, a screaming bull. I don't want to call you a screaming bull.
I've been called worse for less.
By a screaming bull, do you really think China's growth is 6%?
No, it's not 6%.
Is
it 2 going to 0, or is it 2 staying at 2 going to 2.5?
I don't know. Tell me when the 70 stimulus measures are going to take effect.
I think you're starting to see it take hold now, and I think it's going to play the rest of the year. I really do.
Now, with all that said, and Steve on the hook.
Grasso.
You know, when you're at a craps table, which I was recently.
You were.
Yeah,
Vegas.
I was in Las Vegas. I've been all over the place. We can do a whole show on that, but
that's not really important right now.
He's on the hook. With that said, he would even admit, and because I have to, that the fact that the S&P continues to sort of trade above this 2800 level now for the last couple of weeks, it is somewhat encouraging. It sort of blows the hole in our thesis. I think that's what BK is saying. At a certain point, you have to sort of respect the price action and either get on board or accept that, listen, maybe my premise is right, but the market wants to do something else. We might actually be there.
I think 2800 is going from the high end of a range that you want to sell, hoping for a better entry point. And if we can stay above this 2815, it becomes the low end of the range against the old high. And I think that changes. You get a FOMO type environment.
I think that's fair. And to that point, if it does hold key levels, you're a technical guy. At what point do you say, the market's going in my face?
This is something where I thought it was an overreaction in December. I thought we had an equal overreaction that we're experiencing right now. I saw a 10% rally, said that. This is an overshoot. You could be bullish, bearish, and wrongish. I've been wrongish on the last 10%, but I don't want to be buying the market right here until it holds that level 2800. Then you could nibble or you could stay long your longs, but I do think we're due for a little bit of a reversion.
Okay, here's a plot twist, and this is going to be sort of like a Rorschach test. I'm going to show you this chart.
Was that the guy in Welcome Back, Cotter?
You know, like those blocks, and I say, what do you see? And everybody sees something different.
Rorschach test.
That is what this chart of the day is going to be, and Brian Kelly actually brought up this chart during our midday conference call.
Love this.
This is the implied probability of a rate cut. It surged this month. Now, remember, just a few months ago, investors were fearful of multiple rate hikes this year. And of course, Fed Chair Powell pivot to a more dovish stance, calm those fears. But in just the last few weeks, the chances of a rate cut by the end of the year has jumped from 2% to 30%. A rate cut could suggest an economic downturn is coming, which the market is not pricing in. So here's the Rorschach test part of it.
Uh-huh.
Is this supportive or is this a negative for the markets.
So I brought this up because this was exactly my thesis on why we were due for a pause. Doesn't mean we won't still have one. But the thesis was the stock market had not priced in the weak economy yet. But what's happened is the bond market's priced it in. The bond market's telling you the chances of a rate cut by December, this is for the December meeting, are actually 30%, up from 2% at the beginning of the month. So there's been a massive repricing in the bond market. The stock market went the other way and said, hey, wait a second. If we got lower for longer, the playbook has been buy stocks. And so to me, this is what I started at. To me, I got to say, there's something not right with the stock market on my thesis.
All right. So, Grasso, how do you view this chart? Because this is telling me that it's bad for the market.
It's bad for the market. If you look at historically, the Fed has 5% to play around with in cases of recession. That's what they cut in 95. Mm-hmm. That's what they cut in 2005. And that's what they cut in 2008. And they cut it down to zero. If they start cutting now, they don't have the ammo. They have 2.5 percentage points, 250 basis points. They don't have enough ammo if they start cutting now.
Okay. The flip side to this, of course, is that the Fed will remain very supportive of the markets in whatever economic climate.
You know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing for you that I took the Horseshack test in college. We had a whole class.
Is that how you got into Georgetown?
Second semester, sophomore year, 100%.
Forget the SAT.
And what I learned was, Mr. Kotcher, and what I learned is your answer. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Is based on your preconceived notions, your dogma. Uh-huh. You look at that, and PC's bullish,
right.
I see bearish, because
sure,
that's the way I'm wired. And so I'm sort of in Steve's camp. And again, this Fed, this is just the president talking. Not me. I'm just sort of echoing his words. Greatest economy in the history of the republic. Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not an economist. But if that's the case, why is this Fed, why are we about to cut rates if things are so great? I would say, wait a second. What's really going on with the underlying economy? Maybe it's not that supportive of stocks. And at a certain point, the market doesn't have that Fed put in place. Everybody seems to think the Fed's got our back. Well, maybe they don't anymore.
Well, I think the Fed does have our back. That doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. So I'm 100% on board with you that I would like to see them not do this whatsoever. But as long as they are going to, as long as they're going to be supportive, as long as they have the stock market president in there pressuring them to be that way, then I think you just have to say, listen, stocks go up when rates go down.
Look, I don't think this chart's as big of a deal as we're making it out to be. Yeah, it's 30%, but that means there's a 70% chance that they're not going to hike. I mean, that's what it's telling you. I think it is appropriate to price in a higher rate because growth has slowed, and it has slowed, but we're not headed for a recession. We're not going to end up having to cut this year, and 70% odds say that we won't. So, you know, going back to Mr. Kotcher, up your nose with a rubber hose.
See, look, we're fine.
Wow.
Did you ever see that episode? No, see, that was a trick question because he did it in every episode.
Oh.
Yeah, see?
I guess I've not seen the show.
It's unfortunate.
Is it? Coming up, big tech, big problems, a regulatory attack could be coming to the sector. The traders will tell you which companies can weather the storm. Plus, biotech stocks are surging this year. Check out the XBI ETF on track for its best quarter ever. And the Chartmaster sees something in that chart pointing to more gains ahead. He'll be here to explain. And later, Lyft off, the ride-sharing company gearing up for its IPO roadshow next week. And Uber is not far behind. They'll tell you why both debuts have major implications for this market. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Big tech under fire. A state's attorney general warned that the industry is about to face a reckoning as they believe the companies have become too powerful. A regulatory storm has been brewing around big tech and seemingly picking up steam. Facebook, a prime example, with a New York Times report revealing federal prosecutors are investigating the social media company's data deals. But there could be one name to set to weather the storm. Netflix streaming higher today as BMO put the stock as its top tech pick, believing Netflix is the most insulated from plans like Senator Elizabeth Warren's to break up big tech. So with regulators looking to crack down on the tech giants, has Netflix really become the safe tech bet, Grasso?
I don't know if it's a safe tech bet. You know, I've been a bull on Netflix, and you know my feel. Obviously, these names, if the market rolls over, these names are going to roll over pretty hard as well. But I was astounded. I watch a lot of Netflix, and I watch a lot of Amazon Prime, and I only look for originals. But I was very shocked to see the small amount of originals that are really taking up the viewing time. So that's what made me a little less bullish about Netflix. But if you're comparing to Amazon and you're talking about getting broken up, it's a safer play.
I mean, we're talking about this regulatory cloud, right? And the tragedy, the tragic shooting in New Zealand with the role of social media supposedly in this attack in terms of the alleged shooter announcing the plan to do the shooting over Twitter and using all these different social live streaming.
Facebook Live.
That really brings up a whole other thorny a bunch of
Through the lens that you're looking at, absolutely Netflix is probably the most insulated. But to Steve's point, you know, your levels now that we sort of topped out in October, this 365 level, so it would stand to reason we're getting a little long in the tooth. Now, I've done a decent job with Netflix, but for the last $30 or so, I've been wrong. So just that caveat. With that said, I do think Facebook has all kinds of existential risk here. We've had a huge move to the upside off of that last earnings release. But with the headlines now, seemingly every headline comes out as negative. And I think if the market were to roll over, Facebook goes down hard.
Tech has entered the notorious B.I.G. club. And those three letters are the most dangerous letters.
B.I.G.
B.I.G. Big. When the government puts big in front of your sector, you've got a bullseye. It's big tobacco, big pharma, big banks, big tech. That tells you you've got a bullseye. And I think, look, people are okay from a data perspective giving specific pieces of data to specific companies for a specific value. I don't mind if Netflix knows what I'm watching in order to give me something good.
Yeah.
But when you start taking my data that I don't know you're taking, using it for something I haven't agreed to, or you sell it to somebody else, that's a different story. So I think when you look at the business models here, companies that guard your privacy and or use it internally are better positioned than those companies that are using it externally. I think the only issue with Netflix is, you know, let's not forget that Disney's ready to knock on their door.
Right.
So what's interesting is what happened with Facebook yesterday. They had a product left, and I know you guys surrounded the trade last night. But to me, what was different about it is they're now going for a privacy platform. They're going for a privacy messaging platform. Mm-hmm. They might have a Facebook coin. They are actually taking the bull by the horns and saying, we are going to change our way. So I don't think Wall Street has priced that in. And to me, that's why Facebook is actually the most interesting.
I was talking to Ed Lee at the New York Times, a CNBC contributor earlier about that story about the state's attorneys general going after. And I said, you know what? I thought the whole thing was that they, you know, regulators couldn't really force them to break up because there are no legal grounds to force them to break up. So how can state's attorney generals do that as well? And he said, well, maybe the whole angle is that this forces federal, you know, this forces them into a place where they say, you know what, let's do federal regulation, because state by state regulation would be a nightmare for big companies in technology in particular.
Oh, for a company like, think about for a Facebook.
So this, could this be the foregone conclusion that there will be federal regulation
is coming down? Yeah, probably yes is the short answer to that. But to you know, would you want Facebook gets broken up, you want 50 Facebooks, you want each state to have their own? Yeah. I mean, it's madness if you think about it. And what works for Facebook is the fact that basically advertisers have no place else to go. Not that they don't want to go anyplace else, they have no place else to go. But if some of these platforms can get their act together, Twitter, for example, then maybe Facebook is not as seamless and as protected as we want to think.
I think the issue is, how do you break them up even if you want to? And, you know, what grounds do you use? It's so tough to untangle.
For more on Netflix and what is next for the streaming giant, head on over to tradingnation.cnbc.com. Still ahead, Lyft and Uber both gearing up for their public debuts, with Lyft's IPO roadshow kicking off next week. We will tell you what Wall Street is watching, and later FedEx reports earnings next week. We'll tell you why one trader thinks the company will fail to deliver. There's much more Fast Money right after this.
CNBC has quick and easy to understand business news updates at the open, midday, and close every weekday. Markets, money, and more from Wall Street to Main Street. I'm CNBC's Jessica Ettinger. Follow and listen to CNBC Business News Updates wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Two ride-sharing unicorns are entering the final leg of their IPO races. Lyft kicks off its IPO roadshow Monday, while Uber meets with Wall Street analysts next week. So let's go to Deirdre Bosa in San Francisco with more on the story. Hey, Deirdre.
Hey, Melissa. Well, in the early days, these companies, they fielded questions from VCs like, what's your addressable market and who are you disrupting? 10 years later, though, Uber and Lyft are now facing Wall Street to pitch their stories to public market investors, and the questions have evolved. I spoke to a few analysts who cover internet companies like Grubhub, which investors are using as the closest comparison based on revenue multiples and similar marketplaces. It is a far from perfect model, but here are the top five things they say Wall Street will be looking for from the ride-sharing startups when they pitch them. One is capital allocation strategy, especially in Uber's case, as it diversifies far beyond ride sharing. Two, their long-term pricing power. Three, what do margins look like in maturity? Investors also will want guidance on how to think about competition and how they find, pay, and keep drivers in the long term. Now, they also told me that a key metric will be customer and driver acquisition cost. Now, these are all critical questions for both companies that are expected to go public at valuations far above their last private market rounds. Lyft expected to go at $20 to $25 billion. Uber as high as $120 billion. Now, at that price, guys, Uber would be worth more than established names. Amgen, Broadcom, Honeywell, NVIDIA, Costco, just a few of them, just a few of the names that Uber would be valued higher than. So Wall Street is certainly going to want to know how a ride-sharing company with no profits and a yet-to-be-proven business model justifies that amount. Melissa?
Deirdre, thank you. Deirdre Bosa. So here's the question. How is the market going to receive these two unicorns, and will that be the barometer of risk appetite?
Yeah, I actually think the market's going to receive them quite well. I mean, when you look at these businesses, they're asset-light, network-effect type of businesses. So they could get a higher valuation, and particularly in this marketplace where we're talking about Google and Facebook. Those are companies that are generally asset-light, at least a lot more asset-light than something like United Technology. I think the ability to pull some levers and get those profitable numbers will be the one will help both Uber and Lyft.
But they've already shown that their growth is slowing in the fourth quarter in their filings. So that's because they're subsidizing rides. And if the business is so great, why are they subsidizing these rides? Why is their growth slowing already before they even go public? But if you're picking between Lyft and Uber, Uber has a lot more levers to pull. It's the bigger name in the business. I think they'll both be successful. But ultimately, I'm worried about the growth.
At this stage, though, shouldn't it still be growth at all costs? I mean, acquiring customers, shouldn't that cost something? This instance, it is subsidizing rides.
Netflix has done it for, I mean, the last, right? I mean, it is growth. Just, you know, it's a land grab until you get to that point. Amazon, I mean, so the answer to his question is yes. How do you trade these plays, though? Mm-hmm. I mean, Steve would probably agree. Intercontinental Exchange, the ICE trade 17 and a half times. It's backed off since November, as has the NASDAQ. But I do think these exchanges have a lot of value in the environment we find ourselves in.
Time for the final trade here. Time to go around the horn. Steve Grasso.
So if you don't believe that rates are going up, and they aren't going up, and the 10-year seems to be under pressure, then you go with the home builders again. Lennar, stay with it. LEN.
BK.
Well, if Steven's correct and rates aren't going up, which I would agree with, then the dollar should be weak. You buy EWZ or EWZ for my Canadian friends. That's Brazil.
Steve Chavarone, thank you for joining us tonight.
Pleasure. Thank you for being gentle. Look, I agree with Steve here on the home builders as well, but EM, which is what we started this conversation about. Rates aren't going anywhere. Dollar isn't either. Stimulus. Don't fight China.
It's that time again, Mel. You know, it happens every like 12, 13 weeks.
I know.
Another one of our great... Like pages or interns?
They're pages.
Yeah, I knew that. I just wanted to test you. But Shelby Vakulin. Shelby's unbelievable. From San Francisco. She's going to work on Ari Melber's show. Probably called the Ari Melber Show. I don't know. I can mention that because that's MSNBC. Final trade, GW Pharma.
All right. Stay tuned. Options Action is up next.
The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself.
Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.